Parshas Emor begins with a discussion of the special prohibitions with which the Torah admonishes Kohanim due to their special sanctity. They may not marry certain women. They may not defile themselves with Tumas Meis, certain other prohibitions. There are, of course, many other halachos throughout the Torah special to Kohanim. They are entitled to receive certain Matnas Kahuna. They are the only ones permitted to eat certain of those Matnas Kahuna and certain karbanos, Truma, Chala, certain of the parts of the carbon. We are required to honor them in special ways. They are the only ones who can diagnose Taras and the only ones who can perform the Tara ritual for Taras. They are the only ones who can do the Avod in the Beis HaMikdash. The father of a firstborn child must redeem his child from the Kohen. We, of course, have people who we believe are Kohanim, even in contemporary times. However, these contemporary Kohanim generally do not have the sort of reliable, written, authoritative genealogical records, what the poskim call Ksav HaYichus, that at least some Kohanim had in earlier times, in the time of the Mikdash, in the time of the Talmud. And there was a fascinating dispute spanning the entire period of the Achronim, from some of the very earliest Achronim, the 16th century, down to contemporary times, who debate, often quite passionately, discuss, what is the status of these Kohanim? Are we absolutely certain? Do we treat these Kohanim as absolutely bona fide, 100% certain Kohanim? Or do we concede that we're not quite sure? We don't actually know if our Kohanim are real Kohanim. There are many different contexts in which the post can discuss this. We shall survey in this lecture many of these areas of discussion. One of the earliest sources to discuss the reliability or lack thereof of our genealogical traditions is the Rivash. The Rivash is actually discussing a fairly curious case. Yehudi kilel kohen echad v'avosav klolos nimratzus. One Jew cursed, insulted, execrated a kohen and his ancestors, vehement, terrible curses. And they wanted to fine him, and they wanted to fine him with an extra heavy fine because he was a kohen. The Rivash's correspondent wasn't sure what that was all about. He says people in this country have most of their customs like the chukas ha-yishma'elim, the Muslim customs, Muslim laws, and the Muslims say that a makal karov nevi'im, one who curses the relative of a prophet, gets punished very severely. Maybe the Jews have that too. So the Rivash actually says that because of the special mitzvah to honor a kohen, we are actually required to honor him, and there is actually a special penalty, a special level of heinousness to insulting, humiliating a kohen. However, at the end, he gives various mitigating circumstances, reasons why it might not be so bad in certain cases. And he writes, Kolshken Kohanim Shebedarenu, contemporary Kohanim, She'ein Lehem Ksav HaYachas, they don't have these written, reliable records. So it's not so bad if you curse them. It's like we don't necessarily have to come down so hard on someone who curses such a Kohen. So Rivash is not discussing the major lavin in our parsha or anything else. Actually, the Rivash elsewhere seems to imply that the Kohanim of our time are considered full-fledged Kohanim regarding the women they can't marry, for example, a point we shall return to later. But at least regarding this point that we're obligated to honor them and the penalty therefore should be more severe, he says, well, our Kohanim are not necessarily true Kohanim anyway. And the truth is there are actually a couple of Achronim, the 16th and 17th century, who actually argue that it's because of this that people in their times were not actually so diligent, were not so meticulous in fulfilling the special mitzvahs to honor Kohanim. The Magen Avram, Simon Reish Aleph, brings the Gemara. The Gemara says Kohen is lethal money off a Rishon. He has certain rights of precedence in certain social situations. Tzarchin, says the Rama, says the Magen Avram, in his time, Lama ein isharam achshav lahaktam haKohen l'chalanach mili. Why are people not stringent about this, to give the Kohen these precedences? It's Daraisa, he says. V'afshir, he says, Einanu b'kiin b'yichusei kahuna. We're not really certain that our Kohanim are really Kohanim. Similarly, Rav Shmuel Yaf Ashkenazi, in his commentary on the Yerushalmi Yufei Mara, says again, Mashain ha'olam is har nachshav bazeh. He's talking about the rule that Mishtamish Bekuna Maal, someone is doing an Avera by making use of asking a coin to serve him. People are not makbin on this, he says. Yesh lamer lehem tzchus. It's only a limud tzchus, he says. V'shein achshav coin miyuchas vade. We don't have certain reliable Kohanim, for Rabbi Mehmet Zuyafin, many Kohanim are not legitimate Kohanim, they're fakes. And he refers to that Rivash in Simon Tzadi Dalad, that refers to someone who humiliated a Kohen, so too, we don't have to be quite so meticulous about honoring Kohanim. By far, the most heated, most passionate discussion on this topic, the largest quantity of discussion too, occurs in the context of the prohibitions of our Parsha, the women who Kohanim may not marry, and their rabbinic extensions, such as Chalutza, Shvuya, a woman who has received Chalitza, a woman who has been captured by the enemy, who we suspect may have been defiled. So here, as we mentioned earlier, the Rosh himself does not seem to entertain the possibility of any leniency due to the fact that our Kohanim are not Kohanim. The Rav Ash was talking about a man who actually married a Grusha or wanted to marry a Grusha, and the Rav Ash says it's absolutely Aser, Aser Daraisa. She was a bona fide Grusha in his case, and he writes, in the context of the Tshuva, Mikol Makom, Bein Shetiyah Minatara, Omi Devrayan, Kofin Lahotzi. Even had the Kohen already married her, even if the prohibition would only be rabbinic, he says, in his case it was actually Daraisa, but even in a case where the prohibition would be rabbinic, nevertheless, Kofin Lahotzi, we compel him to divorce her. So many poskim have pointed out, in spite of the fact that the other Rivash says regarding cursing or execrating the Kohen, we say, well, maybe he's not a Kohen. Here, the Rivash, and many later poskim follow it, this is a normative ruling. Here, the poskim all seem to assume that even an Isser Drabanan, like a Chalutza or a Shvuya, or a Grusha Drabanan, we are not lenient because the Kohen may not be a bona fide Kohen, we still compel him to divorce it. On the other hand, Rosh Shmuel di Medina, the Marashtam, mid to late 16th century, he is the Rosh HaMedabrim. He was the first major Achron to actually allow for leniency in the case of a Kohen who was married to wanted to marry a Shvuya, a captive woman who we suspect may have been defiled by the enemy. And the Rashtam says, based on the first Rivash, who says that we're not so certain about the reliability of our Kohanim, there is basis for leniency. Now, as many later Achronim point out, even those who don't dismiss the Rashtam out of hand as being simply wrong, Achronim point out, the Rashtam had other tzirufim in his tshuva. He anyway was thought there might have been another heter. He creates a sex feika. Shvuya itself may be less stringent than some other isurim, because shvuya is only really a chumrah. So there are many reasons to say that even the Marashtam's leniency is limited to fairly narrow cases. But be that as it may, the Marashtam was actually lenient, at least in certain cases, regarding the marital prohibitions of a kohen. He was lenient based on the fact that we are not really certain that our Kohanim are necessarily true Kohanim. Now, while the Shvus Yaakov does defend the Marashtam and does also agree that there is basis for leniency in the case of the Shvuya, many, many Achronim, I would say the preponderance of Achronim themselves, the later Achronim say, Kvar Mochule, Bemea Uchli, the overwhelming consensus of the Achronim strongly rejects the idea of the Rashtam that there could be any leniency based on the uncertainty of the status of our Kohanim. They say flatly, absolutely, there is no leniency. There are actually two different arguments they make. The standard argument is that the Chazakah is very powerful, the Halacha is Sokhul Misarfan ala Chazakahs. Throughout Halacha, we rely on Chazakahs even to give the death penalty. The Chazakah is a very powerful thing. And because they are Muchzak, because they have been presumed to be a Kohen, we treat that as absolute certainty, even though we know statistically, mathematically, it's not actually certain, but that's a strong enough evidence for Halacha to treat the Kohen as absolutely certain as a real Kohen. An additional argument some posts can make is Shavi Nafshi Chedicha Disura. If the Kohen himself conducted himself as a Kohen, he himself is self-declaring himself as a Kohen. This argument is actually not so simple, because if the Shavi Nafshe was based on the Chazaka, which we are not convinced about, he doesn't have any more information than we do. He simply knows what his father told him. And if we're not convinced that the family records are reliable, it's not entirely clear that Shavi Nafshe would make a difference. But one way or another, because of the Chazaka and or because of his self-assertion, most Achronim insist that we treat the Kohen as an absolutely bona fide Kohen, and there is no basis whatsoever for leniency. Shmuel Yaf Ashkenazi himself in the Yafei Mara, even though he said that Limud Zchus, a justification for the common practice not to give the Kohanim their special cover, is because we're not really sure, but he says, Mikol Makom, Ein L'Shum Kohen L'Hakel B'Shum Safek Isser. No Kohen can be at all lenient in any Safek Isser. Once he considers himself to be a Kohen, he has to conduct himself with all the Chumrus of Kohanim. Hutzrachti Luchtav Zeh, he says, I've had to write this because I saw somebody wanted to derive from the Rivash, perhaps the Marashtam, probably the Marashtam, a basis for Kula, he says, absolutely not correct, he says. As we've noted, the other Marashtam insists that even for an Isser Drabanan, we're not lenient for a Kohen. We don't care. This is also the opinion of the Tshuvas Chut Hashani, who says that the Marashtam is Dvarim Tmuim Be'enai, to distinguish between different kinds of Kohanim. This is also the opinion of the Knesset Yecheskel, who says Reisi b'ktsas tshuvas ani shamati kam rabbanim rotzim lahakel, because of the suffix, he does not mince words. Chasli lomar kein, chas v'shalom to say this. Kvar machule b'meo uchli dvei rav guvern Yehudan. Everyone rejects this. Nishtaka hadavar v'lo nomar lahotzi laz al yichusei kahuna. This is a terrible laz, a terrible slander against the reliability of our kahuna. If this were true, he says, chas v'shalom, kol b'chari yisrael mibliplipiduyim kedintara. All of our b'charim who are redeemed through regular kahanim are not validly redeemed. Al yechel ki imahim. I do not wish to cast my lot in with those who say such things, he says. Lios chas v'shalom af snif l'daitim. I don't want to have anything to do with them. This is also the opinion of the Zichron Yosef Steinhardt. He has a lengthy tshuva on this, going back and forth, refuting all the arguments in favor of the Marashtam and bringing counter-arguments. Sof davar akol nishma, at the end of the day, he says, from everything I've argued, we're absolutely kofa, shaloka divrei Shvus Yaakov. He says, very strong words. Again, he says, achar b'kashas ha-mechilam et mosav ha-kadoshim. Most of what he says is yotzi in merchas ha-emes. Note the Malkot of Yosher. Basically, it's krum. It's incorrect. He pointed even the Rashdam, he says, was only lenient for a shvuya, which is particularly lenient. Chalutz is more stringent, he says. The Chidah in the Birkei Yosef and Evan Ezer also says that the consensus of the Achronim is that we are not lenient, not like the Shvus Yaakov. Brings a Zichron Yosef, recently printed, he says. The Chikri Lev, Rav Ephrael Yosef Chazan, also says, Kvod HaRav, the Shvus Yaakov, Mekom HaMunach, he says, Ein Safek, there is no doubt, Kahani Zmanenu Hem Kahani Vadai, Gam Bisud Rabbanon Kofin Lahotzi, like the other Rivash, after many other Achronim say, he says, Marash Yafa, nothing to talk about. Yeshuas Yaakov, also, he was actually discussing a question in Aruch Chaim regarding Tumas Kohanim. At the end of a lengthy discussion, he says, maybe we can be lenient because of Kohanim Zmanenu, like the Marashtam. He says, well, not really. Kvar Mochalei HaReisha, everyone dismisses the Marashtam, he says. Maratzchayas in his Darchei Ha'ora, he was actually discussing a medical question. He was discussing whether a Kohen can treat a Goses, someone who's dying, already half dead. And one of his arguments is, maybe we can bring the Marashtam, that there's no problem of Tumah because our Kohanim are anyway not necessarily Kohanim. He has a lengthy discussion. He does bring some support for the idea that we're not so certain that our Kohanim are really Kohanim. But at the end of the day, he says it's absolutely not correct. You have the Chodashani. He says we don't make distinctions to allow any leniency for our Kohanim regarding the prohibitions they face. Brings other Achronim, many other Achronim. And his conclusion is, Kohen, who is Nischazek, who is presumed to be a Kohen, Pshita, the Chaldine Kuhuna, Alav Menatara, he has all the Chumras, all the stringencies of Kohanim, Asur Lakachas Nashim Arsurus Lein, Lutamas Atmo, he may not indulge in any of these leniencies, Kamo Kohanim is Mana Mikdash, Bain Havdal, exactly as Kohanim in the time of the Mikdash, no distinction at all. The Shelas David of Rav David Friedman of Karlin, in his Tshuvas also a question about invoking a leniency because of Kohanim Manenu, contemporary Kohanim are not certain. Also, a lengthy discussion of the topic. He has many other tzadim of Heter in his case, but he writes at the end that which you, his correspondent, wanted to suggest that perhaps we can be lenient because our Kohanim are only Chazaka, they're not Vadai. Anochi lo uchal haskim lazeh, I cannot agree with you, he says. If so, all of our Kedushas Kuhuna is batel, it can't be, he says. And he says, he doesn't bring all the earlier literature, but he says in Svara that we rely on the Chazaka is treated as a certainty. And nothing doing, no basis for leniency. The Sanzerov, Divrei Chaim, Zchus HaYogin Aleinu. He has a tshuva also about a Kohen married to a Grusha and different reasons to be Mekel. But regarding this argument, he says at the end of the tshuva, it's very strong words. Again, he says, Mitam de'ein Kohanes Manenu Rach Mitam Chazaka. If you want to be lenient because our Kohanim are not necessarily really Kohanim, Ein Leharchef HaDibur. I don't even want to spend a lot of time writing about this. He says, Chas V'Shalom Lomar Kein. He brings an interesting argument. He says the halacha is that if a Kohen is sleeping and we find a mace inside the same room, the same building, where there's a problem of Tumas Ohel, we have to wake up the Kohen. The halacha is, for Tumah Drabanan, for Nisra Drabanan, you would not have to wake him up. If we wake him up, it's only because we presume him to be absolutely certainly a Kohen. This is a conclusive raya, he says, Dover's a lesser klal. We treat our Kohanim as 100% bona fide Kohanim. And he adds, Kimadumali Shashamati, I think I heard, Imari Chamizal, his father-in-law was the great Zakan Ha'orah of his generation, or Baruch Tumim Frankel, the Baruch Tam, Shiroi Lazniach Tamzeh, we have nothing to do with this argument, this carries no weight. It's interesting, it was his own father-in-law. He was so careful to write, Kimadumali Shishamati, I think. I'm not absolutely sure. But he himself, he says, he is absolutely not willing to be Mekil. In our generation, we have Rav Elyahu Bakshi Daron in his Tshuvas Bini Anav. He says also, Kohanis Manenu, again, one point in a larger Tshuva, he says, although there are Mekilim, he says, the strong consensus of the Poskim is, the Chodashani, Divrei Chaim, he brings, strong consensus is that even though there are some who allow room for some leniency, the overwhelming consensus is against being Mekil, and therefore that is not a basis to be Mekil. And this is actually the opinion also of Rabbi Kuvager and his student, Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, in a discussion that we shall return to a little bit later. And many other early Achronim also, the Marchash, Rav Chaim Shabsi, and the Marila Beis Halevi, Rabbi Akvil Beis Halevi, and their Tshuvas, are also not very happy with the Marash Damel. They don't completely rule it out. In the Marit, there's a lengthy discussion about it, where there are some Chachamim, the Venetian Chachamim, who did seem to be willing to consider the Marash Damel, but they limited it very much. Anyway, as we have seen, the Sechemed in Chelek Gimel in the Klalim, Klal Chaf, has pages on this. But the bottom line is, as we've seen, there is a very strong consensus against allowing any leniency in regarding the marital prohibitions to a Kohen due to the fact that our Kohanim are not necessarily Kohanim. Another area where Poskim have been debating the extent to which we absolutely rely on our Kohanim is in the context of Challah. It's important to point out that of all these poskim we've seen, many of them have been saying that to be machmir, we treat them as absolutely kohanim. What about to be mekel? What about to give them some of the privileges or to allow them to do things that ordinary Yisraelim can't do? And that's challah. Only a kohen can eat challah. Now, normal challah, real challah, the rice in Eretz Yisrael, you have to be tarot to eat. And we're all tmei emes. That's a moot point. The issue is challah chutz la'aretz. Challah chutz la'aretz. Even a kohen who is tamei meis may eat, as long as he avoids certain tumas yotzei migufo, like balkeri and zav and nida. As long as he can avoid those tumas, he can eat it. So meikra din, the halacha therefore is that a kohen katan who has not yet reached the age at which they physically could have seen these tumas yotzei migufo, or a young girl, in the case of where it's relevant to her, if she's young enough that she hasn't seen nida, or even an adult kohen, if he made sure to go to the mikveh and remove his tumas keri, is able meikra din to eat challah chutz la'aretz. There are, however, a number of poskim, including the Ramah, both in Aruch Chaim and in Yoredez, and stood by the Shach, who said the minik pashut b'chol medinas elu, we only give one challah. The Shach is medayik that the kohen doesn't eat that challah. And in Aruch Chaim, he says explicitly, ein machilin yesh amrim she'ein machilin challah v'zman hazeh l'shum kohen. We don't give challah, even challah of chutz la'aretz, to any kohen, even the kohen katan, who is definitely mikra din allowed to eat it. Why not? Where does this minna come from, and what's the reason for it? This goes back to the early German Rishonim, Maril and the Marivail. Both of them bring the custom not to give challah to a kohen katan, but they give several different reasons. The Maril says that someone told the Maril that he once saw that they gave challah on Pesach. Some Acharim say on Pesach the minhag is to do it, not all year round. Reasons are not entirely clear. A point we'll return to a little bit later. But someone said to the Maril that he saw a maisa where they gave challah to a kohen katan. Maril says it's true. That is the halacha mikra din. There were those who paskin like that. However, he says his custom was lidrash barabim to publicly say shlolam avad hachi, to say that we do not do this. Why not? So he gives a technical reason, shloyamru chalas chutz la'aretz nachelas, some kind of gzera, people shouldn't come to be too lenient in chalas chutz la'aretz. Mari Vail, Rav Yaakov Vail, gives two other reasons. One reason is a very practical reason, chashinan shema yifarer. We're afraid that the young kohen will crumble it, and since it's usser, it might get into other food, and it's not good to crumble up challah and leave it lying around the house. Asli de takala. Oh, and this is the reason that concerns us, Shema mishum d'lom chazikinan b'zman hazeh b'kohen vada. So here we have the Mari Vail, a very early Achron or a late Rishon, saying that we don't treat our Kohanim, again, this is l'chumra, we treat them as safek, not l'kula, but we're machmer not to give them challah because we're not really sure they're Kohanim. This is picked up by a number of the early Ashkenazic poskim, the Marshal and the Amshel Shlomo and Chulin, says our custom is not to give chalas chutz la'aretz even to a kohen katan, certainly not to a kohen gadol, even if he went to the mikveh. Dein lanu hayachas, we don't have reliable genealogical traditions, Einanu Yodim Mukarin Amiti. And elsewhere in Bava Kamma, which he cross-references, he has really, really surprising things to say. There he's talking about cherem, the idea of making something a cherem, which means either hektish or it goes to the kohanim. And he warns you that it's really not a good idea, he says, to implement charamim, to be machram things for kohanim. Why? We don't have real reliable yichus. Even after the bias, he says, in the time of Tanam and Amaram, they still did have good yichus, but today we certainly don't. Back then, they were still close to the bias. They had trumas and taras, so they kept a very good track of who was a kohen. Today we don't. He says, because of the length of the galus, the gzeris, the gerushim, the expulsions, the spalbalu, halavai, to Samar, Saras, Roshenu, here he says, halavai, shleyin, spalbalu, zera, kodesh, bachol. We're lucky, he says, we're in good shape if we don't even have non-Jews who were involved with Jews and polluted the bloodline, he says. Zera, kohanim, v'levim. He says, kohanim and levim, karav levadish, and spalbalu. They almost certainly were non-Jews got mixed in and apostled the kohanim and levim. Imlo kulo, even if it's not total confusion, he says, harov nisbalbal, most have gotten mixed up. Imlo harov, and even if not the rov, he says, vada karav lemechza. He's so convinced that the bloodlines are so polluted, at least, at the very least, close to half, he says, imkei, neitli de takala, so you shouldn't do cheirim because you might have a takala, you might give to a kohen, shein a kohen. And that's why we don't give challah, he says. So the Marshal, following Mari Vail, said very strongly that we don't, L'chumra, we're machmer, that our kohanim are not kohanim, we don't give them challah, we try to avoid giving them cheirims. The Shach also passes this way in Yerodea. The Shach says that because of this thing, the Mari Vail says that our kohanim are not certain kohanim, we don't give them challah. There is a custom, he says, Pesach we do, and he doesn't understand why. Tzarech l'chalek, why is it different? So the Magen Avram, in Archaim, in Hilchas Pesach, also seems to follow this position that all year round we don't because we're not certain they're kohanim. So why on Pesach do? So the Magen Avraham proposes. The Magen Avraham actually explains the reason we're not sure about kohanim is because Dilma Nischala, even if he is a genuine ben achar ben, this is a point raised by Rav Sternbach, a point we shall return to later. Even Ksav Hayachas may not help so much. Even if we know, even if he can show us a list of his ancestors, ben achar ben, male ancestors, all the way to Aaron HaKohen. But who's to say that one of the women along the lines didn't become a chalala? So that's what the Magen Avraham says. We don't rely on our kohanim, so all year round we don't give them chalala. He says, Efsher, on Pesach, the reason we do is because, he brings a shach question, why? Efsher, he says, there's so much chalala, im lo yachlenu lo yimachzikim asik hakohen. There's so much chalala lying around, everyone's going to wonder why we aren't giving it to him. Everyone's going to say, oh, he must not be a kohen. So to avoid this confusion, that's enough of a reason to give the kohen, you know, to rely on the chazakah and give the kohen katan challah on Pesach, where there's so much of it lying around. Moving on to Pidyon HaBen. So the father of a firstborn child, firstborn of Pater Rechem, must redeem his child with a kohen. There is a famous or notorious tshuva of Rav Yaakov Emden. He is so concerned that our kohanim and not kohanim, he says, even though Medina de Shulchan Aruch, you really shouldn't do matam as lahachzer, and it says even though the kohen is allowed to return the money, he really shouldn't. He shouldn't be in the habit of doing it, he says. Bizman hazeh, he says, where our kohanim, he says, many kohanim do return the pidyon, that was the custom in his time, he says, and he thinks that's the correct thing to do. It's nachon, it's tov, it's yashar, to always do that, he says, even though the early poskim say they shouldn't. That was talking about kohanim miyuchasim. Our kohanim, who are not reliable, they're only kohanim chazaka, even though L'chumri says, where we're machmer, we treat them as kohanim, but L'hakel not. So first of all, he says, L'hotzi mamon me'av misafik. How can you extract the father's money? Maybe you're not a kohen. Ein kochan yafe lafkiya mamon b'cheskos nagrua. He goes so far as to say, kemat shani omrish nemidina tzrichim l'hachzer. Mikra din, they have to return it. And even if it's not mikra din, he says, at least every kohen, Yochush la'atzmo, Suffolk Gezel, should be purish from Suffolk Gezel. Maybe he's not a kohen. Another consequence of this assumption that our kohanim are not reliably kohanim, he says, you're allowed to do matanas la'achzer. And furthermore, he says, an incredible chiddush, he says, you shouldn't stop at one kohen. A father should repeatedly redeem his son from every kohen he can find. Mikol kohanim sheyuchal limtso. Maybe he'll be lucky, he'll find a kohen who's really miyuchas, who's really a good kohen. Another Chumri says, Ben Kohen Asu Leviya. the son of a female Kohanes or female Levia, who does not require pitting a ben, should nevertheless be putting himself today, because it's a Safik. It's a Safik Dara. My Shami calls Safik Daraisa. This would be relevant to me. I am a Bechar. I never had a Pidyon because my mother is a Bas Levia. According to Rav, I should go do Pidyon Aben, and probably more than once. I should keep doing it for every kohen I find. Call my Dev Shalot Kunim Esaknina. We should do whatever we can. Lots is day Safik. We are Yirei Shemayim. We're Medaktik Bekalaka Bechamura, so we should try to avoid all Safik if it's a Shalav Adaraisa. He adds, though, a Ben Kohen, a regular Kohen, the son of a Kohen, should not say, well, maybe I'm not a Kohen, I'll go do Pidyon Aben. Because that can lead to a takala. Because if he himself takes an action which indicates that he's not really a Kohen, people will come to say he's not really a Kohen, and they'll allow him to marry a Grusha or to do Tumas Meis. But to avoid that, it's not Kedai. So it seems that Rechem doesn't feel it's a real Safek Daraisa, because then that reason Lachar wouldn't be enough to be making a Safek Daraisa. But it's a serious enough Safek that as long as you don't have this problem of takala, you really should be put to yourselves. A person really should be pod himself multiple times, and even someone who doesn't need pidyon at all because he's a ben kohenes or levia, except for a ben kohen, should be pod himself, even though he's not required to mikra din. And this brings us to a famous tradition about the gon. There are several sources attesting to a tradition that the gon, even though his father had been pod to him when he was an infant, in the normal way, the Gaon himself was posed to himself again as an adult. Now, the Maaser Rav brings this and says that was for a completely different reason, nothing to do with our topic, but that was because the father did a Matzal Mas Lahachzer and he wanted to do a regular Pidyon. Fine. But the Sefer Elias Elio says, I heard a different reason. I heard it was because the Gaon was concerned with our question of the Chusei Kahuna. He felt that traditional and ordinary garden variety Kohanim cannot be said with certainty to be Kohanim. Therefore, he was pugged himself Mikama Kohanim. According to the first reason, obviously, he would have only had to do it once. Do it right once as an adult and finished. According to this reason, he kept doing it repeatedly, he said. And Beprat Shamati, the author of the Elias Elio, says, I heard specifically, this is a thing I think many people know, a common tradition about the Gaon, Shepodos Asnom and Harav Remeir Kohen Rappaport, a sign of the Rappaport family. Why? Because the Kuhn of the Rappaports was very reliable. And he says, V'chein Adavra Shahaya, this was his great-grandfather, he says, this Kohen. He said he had a Ksav Yichus Kuhunas Rappaport. He had a written genealogical record of their Kuhuna, Al-Klaf, on parchment, Boosios, Mishavos, gold letters, Ad Ezra Kohen. Unfortunately, V'nisraf V'sreifas Beso. It was consumed in a conflagration when his house was burned down. So there's a tradition that the Gaon repeatedly was poed himself because exactly Rakhav Emden's problem. Until Rappaport, or specifically for this Rabbi Rappaport, whose kuna was especially reliable. Ramosha Sternbach, in his Halachas Agrom and Hagav, brings this and also says it's another tradition, not sure where, he doesn't give a source, another tradition he says that the specially reliable kohen he found was in Hamburg. He found a grandson of the Gaon, Rabbi Naftali Kohen, Baal Smichas Chachamim, who had a Ksav Yichus also, according to this story, it was Ad Elia Kohen, not Ezra, but centuries earlier, beginning of the first base of Mikdash, Elia Kohen, well before the first base of Mikdash, Elia Kohen. Now, Rav Shtermuch himself says he doesn't understand what good is it even if someone has a Ksav Yichus, he says, because as we saw earlier in the Magen Avram, aside from the question of do you really descend Ben Achar Ben from Aaron HaKohen, the other question is, are all your maternal ancestors okay? Were they all women who were Ksheris LeKahuna? So Rav Shtermuch basically concludes, you're right, he says there are two different problems, and the Ksav Yichus can solve at least one of them, he says. So at least it's better to have someone who has a Ksav Yichus because he only has one problem than someone who has no Ksav Yichus and relies on tradition who has two problems. But in Ochanami, he points out, he quotes Samach Rarnim, who said, in the context of the great debate over reestablishing the temple service, a point we shall return to later, he quotes Samach Rarnim, who said, and quotes an opinion that held that we can find good Kohanim because of Ksav Yichus. And he himself is not convinced that Ksav Yichus is really works, though he does agree that it's better than no Ksav Yichus. Another context in which the Achronim have debated about whether our Kohanim are really, absolutely, certainly Kohanim or not is with regard to Nesias Kapayim, the priestly benediction, Duchenin. So the Marit, back in the 16th century, when he was arguing vehemently for the position that our Kohanim are absolutely, certainly Kohanim, one of his rayas was, he says, the Kohanim Duchen. they make the bracha. Duchening itself, it says a zar, at least according to some poskim, a zar who duchens violates a mitzvah asay. Bracha vatala is a shayla v'daraisa, it's certainly an iser. How can they duchen, he says? How can they, that's not a chumra, not marrying a grusha, avoiding tumah is a chumra. But how can they be mekel and duchen? There might be a zar. Therefore, he says, raya gedola, the fact that kohanim duchen is a great raya, that we rely absolutely, certainly on their chazaka, that they are vada kohanim, even to be mekel, and kolshkin, he says, you have to be machmer based on that, not to have any, allow any leniencies in forbidden marriages. The Shavuos Yaakov, who, as we mentioned, was the second of the great Mekilim after the Marashtam, Shavuos Yaakov says, I'm not impressed by this raya. He says, yes, it's true that a zar who duchens is over an asay, but on the contrary, he says, a kohen who does not duchen is also over an asay. So, damned if you do, damned if you don't, he says. So, therefore, once there's no safe course either way, he says, you might as well duchen and rely on the chazaka. Many other achronim, however, are not convinced by this. First, the Chikri Leiv simply says, that's not the correct calculus, he says. It's true that if there's an issur either way, there's no safe course, but the usual rule would be Sheva Al Tasa. And the Zichron Yosef, followed by other achronim, including Rabbi Kiva Eiger and the Beis Ephraim, both say even further. They both say, it's not really true that he has no safe course, because while it is true that a Kohen who is called to be Ola, who is called to Duchen and doesn't do it, is over an Asay, but that's only, the halacha is, if he's called, if the Shat says Kohanim, or if someone calls him to the Duchen. If no one says anything, he's not over an Asay. So if we were really concerned about if we really felt that the Yichus of Kohanim was in doubt, just that we felt that there's no safe course anyway, there is. There's a great solution. We simply shouldn't call Kohanim as Manazet to the Duchen. And that way, there'll be Yotzei L'Chadeus, whether they're Kohanim or Zarim. How can we possibly call them to the Duchen and risk the possibility that they're being over an Asay? They say, it seems pretty clear from here. Shavuos Yaakov is wrong. They say, it seems pretty clear from here that we are indeed absolutely certain, even Lakula, that the Kohanim are absolutely Kohanim. The Beis Ephraim actually takes a extremely fascinating position. The Beis Ephraim was asked by his correspondent. His correspondent apparently wanted to reinstate the old custom of duchening daily, as the Sfardim do, as they do in Eretz Yisrael. The truth is, the Beis Ephraim really concedes that the Ashkenazic custom not to duchen daily, only on holidays, only on Yom Tovim, is really baffling. The Achronim have been discussing it for centuries. The time of the Beis Yosef, the Ramah, they were looking for reasons already, but Beis Ephraim was quite upset that his correspondent, who apparently wanted to change the custom, that was around the same time, I believe there are stories that the Gaon wanted to change the minhag, but the Beis Ephraim was very intolerant of his correspondents getting up there and deciding to reinstate duchening after centuries. He says there were Gedolim, the Maram, the time of the Rush, the Ramah. He says there were centuries and centuries of Gedolei Yisrael among the Ashkenazim who condone the custom of not duchening. He says, how dare someone get up and thinks he knows better, he learned the sugya. How can you possibly think that you know better than centuries of practice condoned under the auspices of Gedolei Yisrael, he says. So what's Takap Shat? Why don't Ashkenazim duchen daily? So the Beis Ephraim says, it's because of our sugya. It's because of the problem with the Yichus HaKahuna, he says. Our Yichus is not really so reliable, and even if we're not going to be mekel based on it, we're not going to allow a kohen to marry a grusha or a chalutza or anything, possibly, he says, even if we follow all the machmirim, and at least we're machmir to treat them as kohen vaday, but to be mekel, he says, to allow him to duchen, how can we possibly do that? And even though, as we just saw, the Shavuos Yaakov says, we do because either way, there's no safe course, might as well rely on the chazaka. Beis Ephraim says, no, as we just mentioned, he follows the position of the Zichron Yosef and Rik Veger also, that say that, no, don't call him up to duchen, and he won't have an assay either. So that's why he says Ashkenazim don't duchen daily. He says because there's a very serious possibility that he's not a kohen. There's a very serious possibility, therefore, that he's being over an assay. So that's why we don't duchen. Obviously, the problem here is, so why do we duchen on Yontif? So he discusses that. He says it was to make sure they don't forget the kahuna, to avoid, similar to what we saw before from Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and from the Magen Avraham, that in certain cases, Magen Avraham says they gave him Truma and Pesach, because otherwise they would think he's not a kohen. Rabbi Yaakov Emden said that the son of a kohen should not be poed himself, because that might cause people to be lenient. He says something similar, that they had to allow some duchening, they wanted to allow some duchening to make sure that his status of kahuna was well known and was not forgotten. But as much as we can, he says they minimized duchening because they had a real problem. They had a real possibility that he's a czar and he's duchening improperly and therefore violating a Torah prohibition. Another context in which the Achronim discussed the reliability of our Kohanim is, of all things, Taras. A number of Achronim raised the question, why don't we practice the laws of Taras b'zman hazeh? After all, the Rambam says explicitly that Taras, the rules of Taras apply b'Eretz Yisrael, b'chutz la'aretz, b'zman habayis, shelo b'zman habayis, you don't need a Beis HaMikdash, you don't need Eretz Yisrael. So what's stopping us from implementing the laws of Taras? So the first one to discuss this basically is the Radvaz in his commentary to the Rambam on Hilchos Trumos. The Radvaz comments on the language of the Rambam that the Metzora is only Tame if she is Tame also Kohen Miyuchas. You have to have a Kohen and it has to be a Kohen Miyuchas, the Rambam says. Without the pronouncement of a Kohen, he's not Tame. Mizeh Tam, says the Radvaz, ain't Tumas Negarim, Hegas is Manazeh. That's why we don't practice the laws of Tumas Negarim. Because you need, even though it's Eretz Yisrael, Mechutzler, Smei Abayish, Lo Fnei Abayis, Elavadai, the only reason could be, he says, the only possible reason, Mashalo Naguba, Peshein, Ata Benenu Karim Miyuchas. We don't have Karim Miyuchas, that's it. No more Taras for us. This basic idea is picked up by Rav Zalman of Volozhin, the legendary brother of Rav Chaim Volozhin, Talmud of the Gra. And the Sefer told us Adam, all kinds of Torah and anecdotes about Rav Zalman of Volozhin, they attribute to him an explanation, similar idea, but somewhat more sophisticated. He says that since we don't have Kohanim, that's why we don't do Taras. And he explains that the Tara of a Mitzvah involves shaving his head. Shaving his head is a violation of Nisim Daraisa. You shave off the payas. We only do it because it's a mitzvah. The Torah said so. But if he's not really a Kohen, then it's not a mitzvah. So we don't do it. So since there's, we can't just do it al-safik, he says, because al-safik, you can't violate the Isser of a Kavas HaRosh. Hashkos is Pas Rosho, Zikno also, the beard. He says, what about a female mitzaras? For her, there's no Isser of cutting the payas. He says, well, for a female, there's no real nafkamina anyway, because the only nafkaminas of being a mitzara are the prohibition of marital relations and priya and prima, he says, and otz al-safa. And a woman does not have those prohibitions. He apparently understood that the mitzvah itself of performing the ritual of Tara itself is not a mitzvah. It's only if there are nafkaminas. And therefore, since for a woman there's no nafkamina, and for a man it's a problem of a suffix of daraisa, so Mela, since we don't have Kohanim Yuchasim, we don't do the rituals of Taras. Rav Nachum Kasher has a lengthy discussion of this in an appendix to Tara Shlema and Chelaches. The last area in which we discuss the Poskim's analysis of whether we have reliably authentic Kohanim is the question of Kohanim doing the Avodah in contemporary times. Obviously, we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, and there is no Avodah, but this was widely discussed, beginning in the 19th century in the great controversy over the reestablishment of the temple service instigated by Rav Tzvi Hirsch Kalischer, the great student of the Rebbe Akiva Eiger. He started a famous controversy about reestablishing the Avodah b'zman hazeh. And in the context of this controversy, both Rav Kalischer himself, as well as some of the great contemporaries of his with whom he corresponded, raised a number of problems with reestablishing the service. Some of them felt that some or all of these problems were insurmountable. Some of them, notably Rav Kalischer himself, felt that all these problems could be resolved. So one of the famous problems that arose, aside from questions of the Bigdei Kahuna and the Makom HaMikdash and the Shkolim for Korbanos Tzibur, one of the major problems discussed was Kohanim. Do we have authentic, reliable Kohanim? So Rav Kalischer himself felt that we can rely on our traditions of Yichusei Kahuna to allow them to do the Avodah. He has a lengthy explanation of why. The Chasam Sofer argues that even if the Yichus is not so reliable, it's still not such a problem, he says, because unlike all the other cases that we've discussed where if he's indeed not a Kohen, we have a serious problem, he's done an aveira. He says avoda is different. There's a famous rule. The pasuk in Vezosa Bracha says Baruch Hashem Chelo, and the Gemara says this was a special bracha, a special boon to Shevet Levi, to the Kohanim, that if a Kohen does the avoda and then it turns out he was pasul, the avoda is not retroactively invalidated. Afilu chalolam shebahem, it's still okay as long as he wasn't known to be a chol at the time. Says the Chasam Sofer, im kein afilu we kamishmaya that he wasn't chala imo, that he's not a real Kohen, so what? Hare kol mashe ekriv is kosher. It's still kosher, so we don't have to worry. So he felt that this problem is not insurmountable. He actually felt that all the problems were not insurmountable. He said that we can get around. We can get around all the problems. He says lo tzrichim l'koyin miyuchas, and he ends the tshuva by saying v'nochal sham and apsachim. He felt it might be a problem of shkalim, so karban tibur might be an issue, but at least the karban pesach v'yachidim can bring. He says great. Hopefully we can eat kadshim. This is actually a letter written to his father-in-law, Rabbi Kveger. Rabbi Kveger had broached the possibility of levakesh misari Yerushalayim, from asking from the Sari Yerushalayim, the leaders, the Muslim leaders, litin reshus lahakriv, that were actually going, contemplating asking the Muslim rulers of Yerushalayim to allow them to bring karbanos. Kamsarfer says, politically, that there aren't such great hopes for success. He says, hu kapton gadol, he's not an easygoing person, the Muslim mufti or whoever he was. Kehu Amari says, the mufti said, lebal yikrav sham, or yakriv, or yikrav sham, misha'enam emunas yishmael, someone who is not a Muslim. Why? Kisham nivne beis avodah shalahem, that's where they have their mosque, the Dome of the Rock, I guess. Ba'omrim she'evan shesiyah be'emtza kippah, they say that evan shesiyah is inside their dome, inside their mosque. Lo yikrav sham ishdar, she'enam emunasam, no one who is not Muslim may go in. So practically, he didn't think this was going to work so well, but halakhically, he thought that this is not so bad. And the Chusei Kahuna, he got around by this idea of Baruch Hashem Chela. There were others, however, who were not so convinced. Most notably, Rav David Friedman, Rav David Karliner. He wrote an entire kuntris refuting the possibility of bringing karbanos. And he himself, one of his major objections was Chusei Kahuna. He says, Ladati hu atame nimna. It's impossible today to find a Kohen Miyuchas. Again, in his style, he doesn't bring most of the earlier literature. He goes back to the sugya and the basic sugya. But he says, after a lengthy discussion, he says, "Ein lanu ata b'shum ofen." We have no possibility yichalas limtzol piadin kohen miyuchas yuchshel avod. There's no possibility of finding a kohen miyuchas. And the truth is, Rabbi Kveger himself was also not very sanguine about this. He thought this was a very serious problem. So negdenu, he said, "Har kasha b'nina kahuna." He brings the Marashdam and he brings those who say that there is basis for leniency to, because we're not absolutely sure that they're Kohanim. He brings the dispute. He says, L'maisa, to be makel, to allow the Kohen to do something, which, he says, it's one thing to say that we have to be machmer, that we treat the Kohanim as absolutely Kohanim, and we don't allow them any leniency, like most poskim say, not like the Marashdam, he says. But the other way, he says, to treat them as absolutely Kohanim, even lahakel, like to give them challah, which we saw the poskim say you can't do, he says. So similar here, he says, how can we let them do the avodah? If they're not really Kohanim, then they can't possibly do the avodah. He says, Ani ba'ani, he says, Mitzad echad, he says, Eni nimna lazeh lahat l'karan shvazenu shum kulam ashras l'kohanim. I won't allow them to do anything that Kohanim can't do, like marry a chalutza or anything of that sort, he says. Avon mikol makom, since the Gedolei HaRabbaseinu, the Rivash, the Marival, the Marshal, the Chodashani, did treat them as fakers, and we can't permit them to do anything that Zarim can't do, how can we let them do that avodah, he says. So he says you have to be machmer both ways. You can't allow a Kohen to do anything that a Kohen can't do. You also can't allow him to do anything that a Zar can't do, including the avodah.